You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to the Shaking Bones podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Ahola.
In this episode, we are going to talk about something called behavior charts, which has become the new trend. Amy and I are hanging out together to tackle the untouchables. Sometimes we might challenge your beliefs, maybe even stretch your comfort zone. But most importantly, we want to make you think. We don't expect agreement or disagreement, but what we do hope is to cause some shaken bones. You know, Amy, this has become quite the conversation, this behavior charts. Is that prevalent in your school area? Because I know you do homeschooling, but I wondered if you had heard from other people in your area about this whole behavior chart thing.
You know, I don't know how many of the local schools are using it, but I do know that some are. And I do know when we've gone to some of the schools for events that I have seen them in a number of the classrooms over the past couple of years.
Yeah, and what's interesting is we keep switching in which strategy might be most effective for children who they might perceive as challenged behavior. So now they have this behavior chart. And if I'm understanding this clearly, and I actually saw one in a program where there's a red light, a yellow light, and a green light, and children can move from one color to another, and each one is reflective of whether or not the behavior that the teacher wants fits. Is that correct? Is that your understanding of this?
That's what I've seen. And, you know, children can be, sometimes they have to move themselves up and down. Sometimes the teacher moves them up and down. And, it's very, you know, it's a very public, and the pegs stay on there. So like when I went to the schools for an event, the children's names were still on the little pegs and I could see where different children were that day.
But it's almost like, you know, using the timeout, except that we've got a color code system now, because I still believe that that kind of strategy is public recognition for my misbehavior, which is really not what we want to do in terms of changing children's behavior. And I'm always worried what behaviors fit into those categories. So if I were going to be a yellow or a red, what kind of behaviors would I have to do to put me in that color? And then how long do I stay within that particular level? Is always confusing to me, don't you think so?
I think it's really confusing. And I think for children, too, you know, for some kids, it's like, okay, I'm always red, so I'm just always going to be red. And so, again, it's, you know, that extrinsic motivation, punishment, and rewards when really we want it coming from the child and inside and them, you know, not looking for those external sources. And I also think that it causes not only, you know, anxiety and things with those, the children who are, you know, always on red because they're not meeting whatever those expectations are. But I think there's a ton of anxiety from a lot of children who are never outside of green, but they have anxiety about what will happen if I don't stay on green.
Right. And like you said, if they're never going to be a green, then why should I even bother strive towards that? I might as well go ahead and stay and be really good at being a red, essentially.
Right.
Because I keep thinking that's probably where I would be most of the time is in a red. because I again, part of that process is even as adults is to try to figure out what somebody wants in terms of behavior. Even for adults, it's difficult to know sometimes what the expectations are and whether or not they're appropriate for you. And this is kind of an indication of this is a group thing that all of the children have to meet these particular standards to be in a particular level, which is really confusing to me.
Well, and it's not just, you know, it's not just confusing, but it's, I just can't see it being helpful or developmentally appropriate most times to have those expectations because, you know, we put 20 to 30 children in the classroom together and we put all these expectations on them. And what really is the goal behind this? I mean, are we looking at, you know, trying to control the children and get them to obey? Because that's not what I want for my child. I don't want them just to be doing things, you know, to be on a green. I want them to be questioning and, you know, when things don't seem right, saying something about it. But I worry that this really puts that, you know, the authority setting whatever these expectations might be, and it to really be unrealistic for us to expect those of the children. And like I said, I'm not just worried about the kids that are always on red, but I'm really worried about the kids who are on green and just have that fear and anxiety about what's going to happen if I'm not there anymore.
Correct. And, you know, I'm thinking that it might be more fun to be in the red and yellow category because then you don't have to worry about living up to that expectation. So let's just be a red and yellow. So the original reason for the chart is really not following through in terms of the practice because it doesn't really support better behavior. In most cases, because the expectations might be too high or too low. But then I worry, too, whose expectations are they? Like you had indicated, if it's the adult who's setting up these standards and children are not involved at all, even if I'm not in favor of it at all, but even if it were set up so that the children were involved in the process of deciding what behavior, I might be a hint more comfortable with it, although I wouldn't be at all, but there would be a hint if the children at least had some design in that product. But that's not the impression. My impression is that the adult is making all the decisions about that behavior. Is that where you are thinking it's heading to?
Most of the discussions that I had, I don't have a lot of experience with it myself because we homeschool and, you know, we don't use anything even remotely close to this in our program. But yes, most of it and most of it comes from parents, you know, who come with concerns to me, like this is what's going on. This is what I'm seeing. You know, what do I do about this? But yes, it is that these expectations are laid down, you know, by the teacher. Without the input from the students.
Right. And then that, and so what we're talking about again is another, like you had indicated earlier, an external product that certainly can't support or enhance self-control, which is the goal for most behavioral issues, is how do we help children develop a sense of self-control over their environment and over their actions versus someone telling them what's right and what's wrong. So I worry that these kinds of things actually backfire and move toward that direction of, let me show you rather than let's include you in the process of finding out what it's going to take to help you decide what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
And part of that, too, is, you know, when you're having a dialogue with individual students, because that's what needs to happen, because you can't have standardized expectations when you have so many children with so many different things going on in a classroom. You know, when you're talking 20 to 30 children, and especially, you know, early childhood, they consider that up to age 8. And so when you're talking about these lower grades where a lot of these stoplights are happening, you've got a lot of different things going on with children. And just because they're the same age doesn't necessarily mean that they're at the same developmental level for a lot of the different areas and skills that they're looking at. And some of the expectations clearly are not developmentally appropriate for children of that age range.
Right. And I think that's what causes some of the anxieties that children have. And I think that parents might, again, view this as something that might support changing their child's behavior because they might not know that it is not necessarily developmentally appropriate or that it doesn't fit their particular child. It might, it's more of a group emphasis. The other thing too is I'm always looking at those kinds of things like timeout, where teachers often report that it's the same child who's in the same category and is often sitting in the timeout chair or is in red or is doing something, you know, has their name on the board several times. And I therefore have to ask the question, well, wouldn't that indicate that it's not working, that if it's the same child that is there, then it certainly doesn't seem like it would be working for that particular child. So maybe you ought to try something different in the terms of that process.
Right. And I think, you know, the bottom line is that when we develop a solid relationship with each individual child, it's a lot easier to make things happen the way you might want them to happen when you have to manage the classroom. As you know, that is what I hear from a lot of the people who have classrooms of 20 or 30 people. You know, they have to keep children safe and they have to make sure, you know, there are certain things that happen and don't happen because of safety concerns, which is always, and I get that. I know teachers have a lot on their plate, but as you said, you know, doing the same thing over and over again and not getting the results that you need. And when you're publicly humiliating a child or putting on a child on time out and, you know, pushing them away from you, what is that doing to their relationship? Where is the relationship in a lot of that? Because a lot of times when that happens, it's not there.
Correct. Plus, I worry that what message does that give to relationships of other children? Because here a child's name is up, and it could stay up, like you had indicated, it could stay up for a while, essentially, especially if the behavior isn't going to change because it's not working. So then you have children who begin to recognize, aha, it's Dan on the light again, and that's the way he is, and he's just a bad kid, so we're going to avoid having any relationship with him because we don't want to get in trouble either. So it really kind of spoils and deters any kind of positive relationship that children can have between each other, especially during this early childhood years. Don't you think that that probably hinders developing some of that relationship building too?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I also think about, you know, what message does this send to the child? Because when we're seeing a behavior is not the issue. It's something else that triggers that behavior. A child is acting out because of something else. So we're not seeing the root of the problem. We're seeing the explosion that happens afterwards. So what we're telling children when we're putting them on timeout or publicly shaming them is that when you're having a hard time dealing with something, instead of helping you out, I'm going to point out your faults and I'm not going to help you. I'm going to remove you from the situation. And so it really sends a horrible message to them when you think about it in those terms of what we actually do to young children when we put them on timeout or we remove them, rather than, you know, sitting with them calmly or talking them through it or trying to figure out and notice what those triggers are before it escalates to that point of explosion.
Right, and it doesn't include any children in the process of trying to decide what would be an appropriate behavior for them, and it's in their relationship with other kids. So if you've got two kids fighting in the program and the child gets his or her name up on the board because they were involved in the fight, how does that help the two children that were involved in the hassle solve the issue? It says, let me do it for you. So the adult says, by putting it up there, let me decide how this is going to happen, and I don't want to involve either one of you in that process of making a better relationship between each other. So it really removes quite readily the helping the children work it out for themselves.
Right. And then, you know, people wonder why children are so dependent upon adults to do things for them. You know, I hear about these days kids can't do things on their own or they're not able to do these things. It's like, well, of course, if we don't ever give them a chance to work it out or give them an opportunity to try, then if they don't have the exposure or the, you know, that ability to do it, of course, they're not going to be able to do it yet. It takes a lot of practice.
Yeah. It certainly does. I just can't imagine us doing this to adults. Can you see us doing, if we're at a party and some of us misbehave, our name go up on the wall? It just wouldn't happen. And yet we certainly believe that it would work for young children. If it's not going to work for adults who at least have some abstract thought processes, why would we think that it's going to work for children who don't have some of those abstract processes and are really very concrete in their orientation? So the rationale for these behavior charts tend to be, from my understanding and from my observation, tend to be, let me demonstrate my power over you. And the way I can do that is by deciding who is going to go on the color scheme, and how long you will, and that way it serves as a punishment. And Alfie Kohn often talks about in his Rewards by Punishment how often punishment actually doesn't work because it really doesn't give children the opportunity to make decisions on their own in terms of that process. And that's what I worry a great deal about with these kinds of things when they're the power over approaches, which really don't give children a chance to make some decisions on their own.
And sometimes what the adults think as a punishment, as you had mentioned earlier, is exactly what that child is looking for. Some children are looking for attention, and they'll take whatever attention they can get. And so if they're continually being moved and put up on there, and they're really good at that, then they're going to be really good at being read. And the other part that is missing there is, sometimes when children are working really hard at trying to understand expectations and where they are, where they were last week may have been, completely different from this week, but this week still isn't good enough. And I really worry about what message that is sending to the children when it's public like that, and the whole lack of relationship that happens with that. It drives me absolutely bonkers.
Right. And again, I think part of it, and I understand the dilemma, like you had indicated, when you're one adult with 22, 25, 28, 30 kids in some cases, it becomes a little challenging in terms of what procedures to use. But what I find is that simply allowing the children to be involved in some of those problem-solving incidences, getting kids involved in the process of deciding and making choices, seems to decrease negative behavior rather than increase. And these practices do not support children being involved in the process at all. What it does, it's again, it says that I want to show you rather than I want to support you. And I really am uncomfortable with that kind of message being given, especially to early childhood education programs.
And I'm uncomfortable with it all around, especially in early childhood. But before I was in early childhood, for a period of time, I worked in a school where I worked primarily with middle school students. And some of the middle school students that I worked with were really struggling as well, with understanding their expectations and meeting the guidelines of what their work was and those types of things. And working with them one on one and building a relationship with them, and then working through with them to help them better understand their expectations and give them the extra help that they needed in some of their courses, they were just really able to flourish because they needed that relationship that sometimes when we cram that number of students in a classroom, I just can't even imagine. I can't even fathom the amount of work that we are placing upon some of our early elementary teachers to have that many students and try to develop the relationships with all of the other needs that some of those children are having as they're coming in through the door. So I understand that sometimes they're looking for something that is going to, help them out to get through what they need to get through so that they can meet the expectations that are upon them. So I think the whole system is, goofy there, but I know there are so many better ways to go about building that relationship and getting a classroom to work and run where everybody's part of a community.
Yeah, The other real component, and I agree with you because it really is not appropriate for all ages, but the labeling that's involved, because I have heard children say when I visit programs, don't stand by him because he's a bad kid, and that has to come from an outside source. That's not necessarily something that comes from children. It has to come from an outside source, and I worry that those kinds of messages that we give children, that this is a bad kid because he does or she does the following things, and this is a good kid because she or he does the following things, really confuses and doesn't really help children develop the kind of skills that they're needed. What it does is it says you are bad or you are good, and therefore I don't have to achieve any differences, rather than saying you are different in your behavior and therefore we're going to need to take a look at how do we support your strengths. What that does is really focuses on what your weaknesses are. Don't you think so in terms of that?
Definitely.
Go ahead.
And, you know, if you do something, and I think of small communities, because, you know, I grew up in a small community, not as small as some of the other places, you know, around where I grew up. But I think about that, and I think about sometimes, you know, in smaller communities, in smaller school systems, you do something in kindergarten and you're labeled for the rest of your life, you know, that kind of thing. And when this kind of stuff happens and we're using these types of systems with the public shaming and the bad kids, good kids kind of thing, you're stuck.
Yes. Yeah, and it doesn't leave. You're right, it doesn't leave. It's one of those things where it starts early and then builds and creates a level that just is not appropriate for kids in all ages. You know, we're already at the end of this broadcast. We could probably go on forever with this subject because we're both so passionate about this not happening. I think it's really, really important that people begin to take a look at the behavior charts and other kinds of behavioral strategies that people use, that where the emphasis is placed on the adult changing the child's behavior rather than the child looking at what he or she might need to do to develop some self-control. Thanks so much for letting us shake some bones. This was a hot topic. If you have questions or want continued discussion, email me at dkj5075@aol.com or Amy at...
You can email me at amyahola@hotmail.com or you can find me on Facebook at Child Central Station.
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.
Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. And if you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.